You are tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
There will be a time when the world no longer maims us. No, I mean they who, after picking our pockets, knock us down and kick us in the head. That's why so many of us go along lame. You on one aluminum crutch and one stick picked up from some waste place, walking along in hunger and want, pain and deprivation warping your limbs. If all men were one man, he would be you, dragging yourself along. You pull us all forward.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune Tribunal del Pueblo. For ordering and contact information, please wait till the end of the program. On this edition of PTR, we hear from correspondent Jesus Estrada, speaking live with San Francisco poet and cultural organizer Sarah Menifee. Sarah Menifee has published many books, her latest being titled The Blood About the Heart. She also participates heavily in the current homeless movement, especially in the development of such homeless groups as the Union of the Homeless and Homes Not Jails.
Hey Sarah, I was wondering maybe if you could start by giving us some background on you as a poet, like what started your love of poetry?
Oh gosh, I've been thinking about that. It goes way back. And I think, you know, being exposed to poems, hearing nursery rhymes when I was a kid, popular music and the lyrics, especially of the late 50s, listening to people, language, people communicate, and that's how you understand and learn things, and that language is such a collective thing that we do together. And I discovered that I could write poems when I was 12. I had something in mind that I wanted to describe, and I went to write the poem, and it just came out, and it did its rhymes, and it did its rhythm, and that was very wonderful, you know. I like doing this.
Do you remember it, Sarah?
Oh, I wrote it down.
Oh, sweet. Could you maybe share with us? This is so nice.
Oh, I don't have that one in front of me. I was going to read some other things.
No, that's fine. That's fine. You know what I was thinking? Because I'm a poet, too, and what brought me to it from the onset, I think, was my father. He would sing corridos, which are Mexican ballads, and he would rhyme, but he would write corridos and make fun of us. And so I was like, I want to do that.
Oh,
I want to be able to have that skill.
I mean, you get hooked, and you just want to keep doing it.
Sure. Well, could you read us some of your poetry, Sarah?
Yeah, well, I thought that I'd choose one from The Blood About the Heart, which was published about 10 or 11 years ago. There will be a time when the world no longer maims us. No, I mean they who, after picking our pockets, knock us down and kick us in the head. That's why so many of us go along lame. You on one aluminum crutch and one stick picked up from some waste place, walking along in hunger and want, pain and deprivation warping your limbs. If all men were one man, he would be you, dragging yourself along. You pull us all forward.
That's beautiful. I actually read your book this morning, and it occurred to me that it could be read as one large poem or sections of poems. Like some lines to me seem to tie in together into a pattern. So I think obviously, you know, everybody reads poetry differently, and they get something different out of it. How did you envision people reading your work, or was it meant to be a book that people read cover to cover?
Well, yes, I think, you know, for me, and I write a lot of one-liners. I really, if I had a nickel for every one-liner I've written, it would be a heap of nickels. But, I mean, I wrote once a line that said, my life writes one poem. And in a sense, you know, you just keep getting lines of this lifelong poem, and some of them break into recognizable poems, and some of them, you know, when I put a book together, and I put really small chapbooks together sometimes, and I publish my own little ones, and they do. I mean, they're not necessarily written in that order, but you shuffle them around, and so it's kind of multidimensional, and then how to get it down so they relate to each other. And yeah, I think that especially the fact that there are many one-liners. And because I'm pretty obsessive in my themes, I mean, they definitely carry through. So they don't just stop at one place and something else start.
Well, one of the themes that I picked up on was the poverty theme. And,
oh, yeah.
And I was wondering how people responded to your poetry, especially the people you're writing about, because I think a lot of times people see poetry as being a thing of privilege, and they think only highly educated people can enjoy it, or people in, like, bougie coffee shops. How do they respond to it, especially the people you're writing about?
Oh, you know, I've wondered about that sometimes, like, how dare I? But when I've had the privilege of reading my work, especially when I was in the homeless movement and doing a lot of fundraising and events, tying cultural people, and a lot of homeless and poor people write, too. So I've always been very well received, people brought to tears, and it's kind of astonishing. People say, I know what you're talking about, I've been there, I know that corner, I know that person, because I pretty much write from what I see. And so I think that people are both silenced, and I don't try to speak for anybody, but sometimes I write down things I hear. I have a lot of lines that are given to me through my ear, and I write down exactly just something I hear somebody say. And I'm not speaking for anybody, but I'm just responding to the world. And I guess that's a long, roundabout way to answer your question.
Right, but, or in some ways it seems like you're kind of bearing witness, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because until things change, then you have to keep saying what you're seeing, that's all. And one of the things, I started out also as a painter, and so a lot of my work is very visual, too, just trying to write down, make a little picture of what I see. And, you know, hopefully it develops beyond that, but that's a lot of what I do. And yeah, I guess it's bearing witness.
Hey, Sarah, I was wondering if maybe you could tell us more about your activism. I was really intrigued by this idea of being a cultural organizer. What is that?
It's just having events and bringing some, especially some of the younger voices. There's just such a lot of new poets and musicians coming up who are very, very tuned into what's going on, and also articulating really a different future, because youth really is both under attack and it's just being given no future at all. I mean, they're building prisons rather than schools, and there's a very dynamic scene going on, I think, everywhere, but there's a lot around here. And so just doing a little organizing of events, and I guess that's a cultural organizer. Also doing some education. One of the strong things in San Francisco, and they haven't run everybody out. Economics are really bad here, and a lot of artists lost their spaces, but people aren't being silenced, and they're not disappearing, and so there's a lot going on. It's a strong thing, and there's been a lot. This stepping up of the fascism and attacks, I think that there's a lot more, you know, the positive side of it is a lot more consciousness that people, and a lot of the poets who felt like they couldn't be political because they didn't know how to, or they didn't know that language, or that's not really good poetry, have really changed and beginning to at least try to speak to what's going on and speak to the inequalities and the oppression and the war. So it's a really hopeful time that way, generally.
Actually, I was going to ask you a question about the responsibility of poets to this kind of politicizing, to teaching, to maybe helping readers grow in their critical consciousness.
You are tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. Jesu Estrada is speaking with poet and cultural organizer Sarah Menifee about politicizing through poetry.
Well, I think that it's absolutely part of what we have to do, and we have to do it through our poetry, and I think we have to do it in the community wherever we can. Sometimes it's just the people around us. Sometimes it's the other poets we know. Sometimes it's more positioning yourself to help organize whatever it is, and sometimes it's some activism, but it used to be that my poetry was a little more separate from my activism, and there was people who knew me as an activist and not as a poet, and people who knew me as a poet and knew I was an activist. But that's coming more together now. Partly I think that it's just the time as people's consciousness is growing, I think, and partly as I'm learning to bring these things together. Because, you know, we're in a culture that really, really wants the poets to be beside the point and clowns. And we're taught that there are certain things you just can't write about. That's
right.
Not going to be good poetry.
And yeah, I remember I took a course, and they were very adamant about not using cliches like love and peace and heart.
Well, boy, my stuff is just, you know, right, groaning with that stuff.
But this is what speaks to people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the reasons that people are becoming so critically conscious is because so many people are being affected. And I was wondering if maybe you could talk about poverty conditions in San Francisco and how you think these reflect on the rest of the country.
Oh, I think that this is a very polarized city economically. We have the dot-com bust of 2000, which you know, wiped out a lot of jobs and a lot of wealth. We have the highest rents in the nation. They've come down a tiny bit, but they're still the highest. We've always had people in the street suffering, and there's always been, you know, they've always been scapegoated by the politicians and the business, and it's sort of a blame the victim thing that goes on. And every time we have a mayoral race, which we're in the middle of now, you have at least one candidate trying to get to City Hall on the backs of the homeless, and attacks through ballot propositions, which we just had here, you know, taking people's GA money away from them, and it's, you know, being branded as alcoholics and addicts and, you know, parasites and bums. And, you know, the media uses these words. It's really horrible. So, but basically, I mean, it's all over. It's a global thing. And we have it expressed through the war on the poor here and the growing abyss between the very rich and the very poor, and people in the middle just struggling to hang on, and the imposition of the political will of the rich capitalists all over the world, and especially led by these in this country, to crush any kind of resistance anywhere in the most brutal way, and that's war and economic domination. So yeah, San Francisco, also California, tends to be a place where a lot of this stuff is tried out. The three strikes, I mean, we're the biggest prison population in the country, the attack on welfare, a lot of it gets started here. And, you know, the rest of the ruling class watches it and says, well, I did it in California, and now it spreads.
Sarah, I was wondering if maybe you could read some poetry for us.
Oh, sure. I will read something that I wrote a couple months ago, well, around Labor Day, and this is called Labor Day Downtown. John, have AIDS, need food. Over there in the cold, maybe all I had to say is said, as repetitive as those cardboard signs. It's the same old story. He's early at the job of lettering the words. I saw a face I thought I knew, grown old on the street, thinking, oh, let the old men grow old in peace, the old women too. I understand some politic, but am still heart appalled how larger love's ignored. Veteran of the first Gulf War, need help, support our troops. In fatigues and beret, sitting hand over face in fatigue or shame, downtown. I was walking to work thinking of an unwritable poem when I found it there, the same old one. And today another sitting man cradling something in his hands, a small charcoal feathered pigeon. The headlines nearby, 169 homeless deaths last year in the city. Time to write this before work, trying to say something about the work of tenderness and its secret power, or about the grief of the murder of human joy. These are some of the names: Cesar Cruz, Willie Lowe, Joan Busey, Merlin Martin, Craig Pierce, Carlos Rodriguez, Roberto Smith, Barry Belinsky, Polly Potter, Jimmy Luke, Hua Chang. One repaired household appliances. Joan was 71. Old woman, working on this Labor Day weekend in the streets and alleys between the high-rise towers. A flute heard underground, a pretty accordion played downtown with all his heart, white with a red dancing diamond, cultural workers everywhere, the best the soul can sing and play on every corner. Sacramento Street here. Let me just close the kitchen door.
Oh, that's okay, yes. Sarah.
The street sounds, that goes well with it.
Sure does. Sarah, just out of curiosity, those names, were they real people who died?
Oh, yeah. That was a newspaper report, and I wrote down some of the names. They used to, every year, track this and publish the names and talk about who the people were and what the circumstances of their death, and then they stopped doing that. And there would be a memorial and the reading of the names that an interdenominational group did down at Civic Center. But they stopped doing that, but somebody did an article on it and dug up some of the names. And so I put them in. People have real names, and it kind of reflects real people from different places. From here, I mean, it's a little microcosm of the people here in this beautiful, diverse city that we're trying to hold on to, you know.
You're tuned in to PTR. Poet Sarah Menifee is discussing aspects of her poetry with correspondent Jesu Estrada.
Yeah, I thought that was really powerful, just listing off names. Hey, sir, I don't know if you've seen the recent Census Bureau, but in 2002, the amount of impoverished people rose over 1.1 million, and I even think that's a conservative estimate, because the way they do the poverty line is ridiculous. But
they keep shifting it downward.
Well, I think it was 14,000 for a family of three under the age of 18, which is like, how can people live on that? That's absurd.
They can't.
You know, but I was wondering, because you've mentioned the capitalist class a couple of times, if you can maybe talk about what you think is causing this this growing number of poor people in this country.
Well, I think that that the new technologies are really creating abundance, and the ability to, there's everything anyone needs out there to live and to thrive, and we don't need to be working for not enough to live with all we need, but as long as we have a for-profit system, which capitalism is, then we can't have anything unless we pay for it. And we have the technologies that are replacing workers with machines and shifting things to the poorest places. And it's a process. I mean, that the ability for capitalism to function and take care of majority of the people is really over because of this. And they're not going to give up their grip on this thing and their privilege and their wealth, and they're not sharers. And the majority of the world's people are pushing in that direction just by virtue of fighting for what they need. And I'm thinking of the beautiful people of Bolivia, the poorest country in South America right now, rising up. And I've been in Peru. I know what that is. The folks there, Indians, the poorest there are, fighting this corrupt ruling class with sticks, really having some triumph there. It's running the president out of office because they're stealing the wealth. I mean, just to the point where people are so impoverished and so hungry, and they see under this globalized, you know, ruling class of capitalists, that everything's going to be stolen, and they're going to be starved to death. And I think that that people are just beginning to fight back. I think this brutal war that's being waged is waking people up. People's fears are being played on, and we're kept pretty ignorant. So, but I don't know, I think I've strayed from the question.
No, I think that was a beautiful question. One of the things that people don't recognize when they see these problems happening in Latin America are how the capitalists in this country connect to the capitalists in those countries, because we support these dictators in the ruling class in Bolivia or Guatemala or you name it. You
we
know?
train their death squads. Yeah.
But what I'm thinking, you know, that there are other governments and other people, like the people of Venezuela and people of Brazil, who are trying to counter the IMF and the World Bank, and it's hard. It's hard for them because of the structures that are set in place.
Yes, but it's hard. But you know, there's a saying that there's no force in the world can stop an idea whose time has come. And I think this not only that it's an idea of its time has come, but we've got the objective basis for really changing things completely. Because we have now abundance. So we can have a cooperative society. We can have that. I mean, the enormous amount of violence is taking place to stop what is a normal evolutionary change, which would be the desire of the world's people and the normal evolution of society. But you've got people controlling a lot of weapons and with a lot of stolen and amassed wealth, basically writing the laws, you know, standing in the way. But there's a lot more of us. And I think that when you see the fact that there's the landless workers movement in Brazil, and I met a man who was involved with that. He was an architect, so there's a lot of support for that in other classes or levels of society. But really the impoverished of Brazil are taking over great pieces of land which are owned by just a few, you know, the oligarchy of people, and creating cooperative communities, and also in the barrios of Lima and places like that, and I'm sure it's happening in Mexico too. And just creating their own societies within, you know, the decay of this old one. So I think it's both on that ground level and also people just waking up to how this works and what the alternative is. When the working class of this country does, and I think that it's starting to stir, there's nothing going to be able to stop it. And I don't even necessarily mean any kind of violence. I mean, I think that the violence is already here. I think that people want life. They want peace. They want to raise their families. They want to be creative. I mean, I shouldn't say they, that's what we want. We want to write our poetry. We want to love our family. We want to see our children educated. We want to see a healthy culture, and we don't want to see the planet destroyed. And I could go on and on. So I think that there's a big, I think that there's an enormous movement underway all around the globe. And I think some of the folks that have been doing this came together in Porto Alegre, you know, the movement of movements. But I think a lot of it is just on the street level where people aren't even organized. That's the 1,000 points of light, you know. There's a little revolutionary fires, and anyway, I could go on and on.
Actually, you know, this was just out of the blue, but I was in church on Sunday. My priest said something that I just wanted to stand up and giving a standing ovation, and he said, you know, sharing is natural. And that is so counter to what people who are my students or people in general believe, who think that competition is natural, that it's natural to be in a dog-eat-dog state of mind. Mm. What do you think about that, Sarah?
Well, they've ground that into us. I think that's another violence that's been put onto us, just our culture and our education. And the human race would not have survived without cooperation. We're social beings. And I think this is just enormous no job that's being done every second by the ruling class, and it's flunky. To mutilate that and kill that in us and or make us question it, they can't kill it. And there's the ideologues that are keeping this alive, and you see it. I work in a bookstore. I see the books. It's really quite disgusting. And those are the voices that have access to the airways. There's reality, what people actually do. But there's also the fear for survival. People feel like it is a struggle and a competition, and nothing is going to be given to them, and they don't deserve anything. The whole trend is to say nobody has a right to anything. You may be given something, but you don't have a right to it, and that's the whole idea of even a safety net or welfare or anything, which is just a crumb. We're just snatching away the crumbs. And they have to indoctrinate people, or they wouldn't accept it. It goes against nature, I think.
I think you're right, and even if it doesn't, I think people are rational beings and they can be taught differently. I think part of this angst is that people are afraid, one, that there's not enough, when obviously we know there's an abundance.
Right.
You know, and the other thing, I've been reading a lot of liberation theology, and there's this liberation theologist named Jose Miranda who talks about how giving back to the poor is giving back to them what's been fully stolen.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that was just such a beautiful way of putting it. But
of course, and that charity shouldn't even be it shouldn't even be necessary. What we need is a just sharing and taking care of each other. And then it's not charity; it's equality. We take care of our people. Our people is everyone.
That is it for this edition of PTR. People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society, aiming to unite the strivings of the people against injustice with the consciousness to guarantee the outcome that is in the interest of all of humanity. If you would like to contact the League for our other print and media resources, or maybe to schedule a speaker for your next event, feel free to call us at 1-800-691-6888. That's 1-800-691-6888. Also, visit us on the internet at www.lrna.org. I'm Kenny Shook. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, I want to thank you for listening and ask you to join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.